Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
The 0-1 to Duplantis. Hit high and deep to right field. Kerstad on the track near the wall, makes a leap, and it's gone! Three-run home run! Tigers take a lead! 3-2 is Antoine Duplantis. So a pitch he liked and drives it deep into the bullpen for his ninth home run of the year. And the Tigers, here in the top of the eighth, have their first lead of the ball game. It's 3-2 LSU.
Good morning, Acadiana. This is Raymond Parks III, and this is RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing, and we're simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium, 24-hour sports network. Give us a call today on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, as always, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We have a jam-packed show for you this morning. We're going to talk Houston Astros getting that sweep over the Tejas Rangers. That's right, four-game sweep for the Astros. They are rolling right along, kind of making you forget about those early season struggles, aren't they? Astros are on track. Raging Cajun baseball team got themselves a sweep over the weekend, wrapping up the regular season at home. They still have a three-game set this weekend at ULM before Sunbelt Conference play. But the Raging Cajuns went from the outside looking in for the Sunbelt Conference tournament to firmly placed in the top 10 in the conference standings for a ticket to Oxford, South Carolina. Raging Cajun softball team had themselves a productive weekend. They locked up the Sunbelt Conference Tournament Championship, went undefeated in Sunbelt play, and then found out their fate on where they're going to go. Not to Baton Rouge for the regional, but they're going to stay in the SEC as they head over to Oxford, Mississippi, take on Ole Miss in the Oxford regional. Plus, NBA playoffs. That Kawhi Leonard shot was phenomenal. We're going to be talking about that one for years to come. Plus, we'll talk high school baseball coming up on today's show. We'll have Justin Boyd, the Opelousas Catholic head coach. His team is in the state championship round for the first time in program history. The last time the school was there was when the school wasn't even called Opelousas Catholic. That was in the late 60s, early 70s. We'll talk to him about his team's chances and their season. They're playing today, later this afternoon, in Sulphur for the state championship. We'll also talk to Bro Bridge head coach Kyle Cormier. His team won their semifinal game yesterday in Class 4A. They're moving on to the state championship round on Tuesday. And we'll also talk to Jeff Palermo from the Louisiana Radio Network and our good friend Jarrett Rozier from Tiger Details. So plenty to get to. But we'll start off with LSU baseball. When is a series loss not really a series loss? When it ends a five-game losing streak and you salvage a series and you have stopped the bleeding for your late-game skid. LSU entered the three-game set in Fayetteville, Arkansas, against the top-ranked team in the SEC West on a three-game losing streak. This is a team that dropped the final two games of its weekend series versus Ole Miss at Alex Box Stadium, including Sunday night's affair in a gut-wrenching manner when it rallied to tie the game late, only to drop four runs in the top of the 10th to lose that game. The Tigers were unable to get themselves off the mat from that loss, turned around, got curb stomped by Louisiana Tech in a midweek game. First time Louisiana Tech had beat LSU in like 38 years. And then they carried that over into the first game against Arkansas on Thursday night. Mikhail Hilliard got roughed up. Then came Friday's game. You get a decent start from Eric Walker. Zach Hess comes in, not so much. The sky was falling in Baton Rouge. Five-game losing streak. Series already gone. We're going to win the series now. In the danger of not hosting an NCAA regional. And then Chwanee came through. Lafayette High Zone, the senior. We talked about a lot on last week's show. Does this team have leadership? I believe it does, but it's quiet leadership. They don't have a Kramer Robertson in your face, rah rah kind of guy. They have guys like Antoine Duplantis that are kind of quiet, work hard, set the example. This is how we're going to do things, and then step up in big moments. Duplantis launched that three-run home run that we heard earlier in the eighth inning on the road. And the junior right-hander, Todd Peterson, fired four shutout relief innings to lead LSU to a 3-2-1 win over fourth-ranked Arkansas at Baum Walker Stadium. Once again, LSU loses the series, but they avoid being swept, and they stop the five-game losing streak. And what's also great about what occurred yesterday, if you're an LSU fan, is, I'm sorry, on Saturday, rather, the bats came up big when they needed to. Peterson returned to form. Remember, he got essentially placed out of the bullpen. I mean, he was supposed to be the man. Fontenot overtook him because Peterson was inconsistent, and you didn't get to see Todd for a while, remember? We weren't calling his name a lot. Four shutout innings of relief work from Todd. And what I loved seeing from LSU, there was fire in that belly on Saturday for that game. They cared. They gave a damn about what occurred. Definitely Peterson. And maybe Todd is the guy. Maybe he's the fired up guy now that he's playing more and he's pitching a little bit more out of the bullpen. Maybe he's the guy. He's the rah-rah guy that this team needs. Because if you watched him pitch for those four innings on Saturday, that cat was raring to go, man. Fired up, ready to go. The Duplantis came up big. Landon Marceau looked pretty good. LSU improves to 31-21 overall. Now 15-12 in the SEC. Arkansas remains the cream of the crop in the SEC West. 39-13 overall, 19-8 in conference play. LSU does return to action on Tuesday. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game as they'll take on UNO at the box for the final midweek game of the season. Maneri said this afterwards, quote, "I'm so proud of our guys for giving a tremendous effort and getting a well-deserved win in a very hostile environment. There were so many great performances in this game. Our players could have felt sorry for themselves after tough losses in the first two games of the series, but they came out fighting today, battling with every pitch." LSU trailed 2-0 in the top of the eighth. how Hughes got things started, Tigers third baseman with a single, and Brant Broussard, who's not known for his hitting prowess, but he was disciplined at the plate. He drew the one-out walk. Arkansas pulled reliever Cody Scroggins and replaced him with the right-hander Jacob Kostaschak.
That was just not going to go well for you, no matter how you... If you're not watching on Stadium, when we did the... What was the first pitcher's last name? What are we? Scroggins or Scroggins?
Scroggins.
Yeah, me and Raymond shared a look with each other and a shoulder shrug. Like, it's not sure on that one. And then it hit you with a second name that's even worse. So, good luck, friend.
Jacob K, who was greeted, he's the one that gave up the three-run homer from Duplantis, his ninth home run of the season for the former Lafayette High product. Hughes had a career high for hits with three. The home run for Duplantis, by the way, was his 334th career hit. And now he's only 18 hits behind Eddie Furness on the LSU career hits list. Peterson earned the win in relief. He's now 4-2 on the year. Marceau blanked the Razorbacks in relief of LSU starter Landon Marceau. And Todd Peterson went the four scoreless innings. Marceau worked the first five innings for the Tiger. He only limited Arkansas to two runs on seven hits with three walks and two strikeouts. So he looked pretty good. I mean, if your starting pitcher is only giving up two runs, he's giving you a chance, especially if he's a freshman. And Marceau's had his struggles this year. So once again, yes, they lost the series. You're absolutely correct. But when is a series loss not really a series loss in this case? LSU needed this. They needed... If they would have been swept, that would have been six losses in a row with a midweek game, and they've struggled in the midweek games, especially midweek games versus in-state opponents. They're 5-5 versus in-state opponents this season. You know, what would have happened then? But they get a win, and they get it on the road in a hostile environment. This is not a very good road team. So to get a win on the road against the best team in the SEC West, Peterson's has some confidence. He's fired up. He's giving you that kind of vocal leadership that you're looking for. Duplantis comes up with a huge three-run blast. I think LSU can breathe now a little bit. Don't be surprised if you see LSU now bounce back, take the midweek game, and win the series versus Auburn. And if they do that, and they win just one game in the SEC tournament, let's say maybe two, they're hosting an NCAA regional. We can argue that they may not deserve to host an NCAA regional, but if LSU wins the series versus Auburn, wins their last midweek game, and wins a game or so in the SEC tournament, and they're around about 36, 37 wins on the season, they're hosting an NCAA regional. Do not be surprised if you don't see LSU move at all in the polls when they're released later today, which you can find on 103.7 The Game blogs later this morning. Much-needed win for the LSU baseball team. Coming up, Raging Cajuns got themselves a sweep. When we get back here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game.
We had to pitch well. We were piggybacking game one, piggybacking game two, so that puts us sharp in game three. And, no, they did a good job. I mean, leading up to, you know, the walks from the younger guys in that five-run inning, we had given up one run and I think, you know, 16, 17 innings, 15 innings, somewhere in there. So, no, the pitchers did good, and we're going to have to do that again this weekend and you know, take care of our business down there. Like I said, we've been trying to work on one pitch at a time, one at bat at a time, one inning at a time, and then trying to put something together and then look back up. You know, we got the blinder on the old mule. We're just plowing, man. It's all we can do at this point.
Just got the blinder on the old mule. We just keep on plowing. Tony Robichaux. Very happy. Tony Robichaux. Raging Cajun's head baseball coach as his team celebrated a three-game series sweep of Georgia State there at Russo Park this past weekend. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium News Network. Raging Cajuns put themselves in quite a hole. But boy, they're trying to finish the season strong. They went on the road and took 2 of 3, if you remember, from Coastal Carolina. Kind of stopped the bleeding, so to speak, for their woes this season. Georgia State's the worst team in the Sun Belt Conference, but Raging Cajuns found themselves before this weekend on the outside looking in. There's 12 teams in the Sun Belt Conference. Only 10 of them get to play in the Sun Belt Conference tournament this year, held in Conway, South Carolina, home of Coastal Carolina. They were ranked 11th before this weekend. Now they're in the top 10. Yes, Georgia State's the worst team in the conference by far. But that doesn't matter to the Raging Cajuns. The only thing that matters to the Raging Cajuns is finding a way to win games to get themselves in the postseason. That's the only thing that matters. They started things off Friday night in a game I was able to catch there at Russo Park. Went in small ball fashion. Georgia State does have themselves a hell of a pitcher named Hunter Gaddis. Guy's got filthy stuff. He pitched 8 innings. 5 hits, 2 runs, struck out 11. And he had some nasty stuff. You could see him at the next level. Georgia State's not bad because of him, I can tell you that much. But UL threw out their guys as well. Jack Burke looked very good. 5 innings of work, 2 hits, no runs. Struck out 6. Elbow got a little tender on him. Coach Robe and his staff pulled him, put in Austin Perrin, who went out for the big, rare 4-inning save, where he only surrendered 3 hits, no runs, while striking out 5. They won that game with a little small ball. Couldn't get really anything going against Georgia State, but they got enough, and Oren Vaillant, that's right, the former STM Cougar, he led the way with 2 hits, and he got things going early on as he's the one that got on with a single, stole second base, stole third base, and then was able to score on a sac fly that gave the Raging Cajuns their first run. That's really the only run they needed as they went on to hold on for the 2-0 victory. So they used small ball in game one on Friday night. On Saturday, it wasn't small ball time. Hayden Cantrell set the tone early with his home run in the bottom of the first. Georgia State replied as Bell homered to left field himself to tie up the game. But that kind of opened up the floodgates, right? Brennan Breaux homered in that game. Another former STM Cougar. Trent Lott had a triple to center, bringing in runs. It seems like every single Raging Cajun scored in that game on Saturday's whooping, which was 16-6. Raging Cajuns put up an 8 spot in the bottom of the 6th inning in that game. You know you're having a good day. Your team's having a good day at the plate when you can score 8 runs in 1 frame.
Been on the wrong end of that too many times.
They've been on the wrong. You're right. Hayden Cantrell went 2 for 5 in Saturday's game. Hunter Castles 3 for 4. Todd Lott 2 for 4. Handsome Monica 3 for 5. Daniel LaHare 2 for 5. Brennan Breaux 3 for 3. I mean, just across the board. Hell, O'Neill Lockridge, another former STM Cougar, He scored two runs, had three RBIs, three walks, didn't get a hit. Ground out, scored a run, and then he was on base. His walk drove in a run. Tony talked about, as the weekend concluded, on his team's improved hitting of late.
Well, you know, the big thing is when we started the year, believe it or not, our whole thing on paper was we didn't know what we were going to do with pitching, but we thought all the age was going to be on the side with the hitters, and so we did put in a new hitting system. I say new, but I just think as they went on, they stayed the course, they stayed on the process that the hitting said to stay on. There was many times we vacillated from it, you know, and had half the lineup doing it and half the lineup not doing it and all that stuff. And by the time we got through all of that, you know, I think they've all gotten themselves together and have done a great job of getting on what they've been trained and taught to do. And now there's no holes in that lineup. And Locke even produced today for us with a big hit. And we're starting to hit with, you know, when the bell rings.
Starting to hit as the bell rings. Then came Sunday, final day on Mother's Day. They pull out the 11-5 victory. The bats were productive once again across the board, up and down the lineup. Yet Grant Cox goes. He gives up three earned runs to start off the game in four innings. He's replaced by Caleb Armstrong that ends up getting the win. But it was Gunnar Leje who was able to come in, pitched an inning and a third, gave up two hits, no runs, struck out two. His likely final game there at Russo Park, picked up the save, and this is what Tony had to say about Gunnar being able to go on Sunday.
Heading into the weekend series, he had to get a release, you know, from doctor, and he got it and everything. And so the trainers and everything said he was good. And so he knew that we were going to be able to use him, and him and I had agreed it would be Sunday, the ninth inning on Sunday. And we were trying to get to the ninth inning on Sunday, and then we saw the time, no inning starting past 2:15. We went ahead and treated that last out, you know, like the ninth inning. I really wanted him to only get three outs. But I didn't know we were going to have a big inning, you know. So the big thing we want to do right there is not let the game get tied.
Gunnar Leje got himself the save. Terrific weekend for the Raging Cajun baseball team. They will wrap up the regular season this weekend at ULM with a three-game set. They take two of three. That'll lock up a spot in the conference tournament in Conway, South Carolina. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Raging Cajun softball, they know where they're going for the regional.
Well, what the committee did, they went by RPI. And when they go by RPI, they're not just going by what you do, they go by what your opponents did. And, you know, we scheduled Baylor, we scheduled Cal, we scheduled Oregon State, we scheduled Oklahoma, we got ice out at Oklahoma, you know, Oregon State, Baylor, Cal had really bad seasons. And so that basically, from the way the committee looks, that knocked us out of hosting. They didn't pick who they thought was the best 16 ball clubs in the country. They picked by a formula, by a set of standards, you know, things that combine the one-loss record, the conference finish, the RPI. I don't know whether they considered what the polls were at all, or I imagine a little bit, but they use a different formula, and it's not a reflection of who they think the best 16 teams are. It's a 16 teams that fit the standards that they're looking for, and we didn't fit that because of what our opponents did.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's Stadium, 24-hour sports network. That's UL Raging Cajun head coach Jerry Glasgow last night on Pete's on Johnston, where the Raging Cajuns had themselves a little bit of a watch party for the selection show for the NCAA softball tournament. Despite being ranked in the top 10, despite having only, you know, 50 wins, Jerry Glasgow's squad is on the road. Now, they will not be going to Baton Rouge. Baton Rouge will not be calling for the Raging Cajuns this year. A lot of us thought that could be a possibility, but they do have to go play in a regional hosted by an SEC West team. Ole Miss. The Raging Cajuns are headed for their 21st consecutive appearance in the NCAA tournament. That they'll be going to the NCAA Oxford Regional at the Ole Miss Softball Complex. The Sun Belt Conference regular season and tournament champions. They did not lose in a single game in Sun Belt play from start to finish, regular season or the tournament.
Not sure how you do better than that.
Not sure how you do better than that either. It's the 29th appearance overall, all coming in the past 30 years for the nationally recognized Raging Cajuns program. The only year that they missed the NCAA postseason was 1998, since 1990. So, Ole Miss is the 11th national seed. 37-17 overall, they're their host seed. Also in the Oxford Regional will be obviously UL at 50-4 overall. Southeast Missouri, 45-16, and Chattanooga, 37-15. The winner of this regional will play the winner of the Tucson Regional, which features number 6 seed Arizona, Auburn, Colorado State, and Harvard. I understand that some Raging Cajun fans are going to be disappointed that UL didn't get to host a regional. Lampson Park is amazing. Terrific environment. Others probably feel the same way about them not going to play at LSU. Closer, regionally speaking. Get a chance to kind of avenge postseason disappointment against the Tigers. But this gives UL the best opportunity and the best path to get to Oklahoma for the Women's College World Series. Ole Miss is not a giant by any stretch of the imagination. UL can win that regional. And not only are they going and they're the 2 seed in a regional, which may be shocking that a team ranked in the top 10 in the polls, the number 7 ranked team in the country, is the 2 seed at the 11 seed regional. Okay? Which tells you that the committee says, okay, if you just break it down, they're telling you that UL is really like ranked in the 20s, right? Because they're the 2 seed at the 11 regional. That's what they're telling you. But I feel like if they win this regional, and they can, then they get to play the 6 seed, which is Arizona. And Arizona is a nationally recognized program. This is a championship-level program, not denying that. But it's a lot easier going from hosting a regional and then having to play UCLA or Oklahoma in the Supers, or do you go on the road as the 2 and have to play the 11 seed and the winner of the 6 seed regional to get a chance to go to Oklahoma City for the College World Series, and then anything can happen. Jerry Glasgow's squad enters the tournament winner of 27 straight games, the second longest active streak in the nation, behind Oklahoma, and one game shy of the program record streak. The Cajuns boast the nation's leader in wins and Sun Belt Conference Pitcher of the Year Summer Ellison, former Turnings Catholic star, and is armed with a lineup that features 9 batters hitting over 300 and ranks top 10 nationally in several categories. If you're Ole Miss, you're not very happy. You weren't very happy last night.
That was literally, I was waiting for you to kind of get through all the stats and roll through exactly what you just did there. I was biding my time because that was my exact question to you. You spoke a little bit on how you feel about this draw for the team. You spoke a little bit of probably how they feel about it. We heard how Jerry Glasgow feels or how he thinks they ended up here. I want to know your thoughts on how do you think Ole Miss feels right about now?
Not great. Not great. Because the Raging Cajuns, every time they're in the regional, they get to the championship round. Right, for that regional. Now, sometimes they lose, but they get there. If you're Ole Miss and you're thinking, great, we get to host a regional. Oh, damn.
Wait, what's their record? Wait, what? 50 and that's a typo, right, Coach? It's not. Oh, snap.
One of those losses is to Oklahoma, the number one ranked team in the country.
Right.
So if you're Ole Miss, you're like, really? This really happened? And to Jerry's point, you don't know how this – you don't know – you know, I've heard some complaints. Well, you know, they should have scheduled better. Timeout. Everyone that makes that argument, and I've heard it, when they scheduled this, when they scheduled Baylor, Baylor is traditionally a top 25 ranked program. It has been in years. I've seen Baylor come to Lamson Park and play, and they've been a top 10 team. You make that schedule a couple years out. So they thought, they believed that Baylor would be a good team this year. Baylor was not.
Right. And I mean, and that's also one of those, to me, I think, an easier said than done type thing for the Raging Cajun softball team to schedule all these powerhouses. There's not too many teams that are like that are just willing to, oh yeah, we'll come to Lamson Park and we'll play you, or yeah, come to us and play
Baylor's one of them because they've played each other traditionally like the last decade, right?
But it's not even because it's a small school. It's because UL competes, because you know when you're
right.
Like, you're not just going to bring in these other top-tier teams with a simple question, hey, coach, come play us, because why would they want to, you know, oh, snap, there's a loss to us in the middle of the season, early in the season, to a Sun Belt team or something, regardless if it's UL.
Right, and they had the tournament up there at Oklahoma. That's where they lost to Oklahoma. And they beat Oregon State, but then the rest of it was iced out. Okay, so they actually had a couple games. So the Raging Cajuns' record could actually be a lot better. They had a couple games iced out at that tournament, right. And then we know that they lost two games. Not they didn't physically lose, but they lost them,
canceled.
Were canceled at ULM. So this could have been a 54-win team. But Jerry makes the great point. There, it's not about who they won. It's about the teams that they – it's how the other teams fared, and they did it strictly on RPI. Even though the coaches and media members were like, this is one of the top 10 teams in the country. So if you're Ole Miss, you're going, awesome. Awesome. And I'm going to say it. If you're LSU, you're breathing a sigh of relief.
I'll say.
Because you know how contentious this has gotten between LSU and UL in softball, and how close it was last year from going the other way, right? This LSU team stumbled a little bit down the stretch.
They've not played their best ball lately.
Correct. And early exit from the SEC tournament. They have to face Louisiana Tech instead of UL. So, you know, there was a lot of talk. We're thinking, oh, they're going to go to Baton Rouge. They're going to put UL and LSU again. That didn't happen. So LSU's breathing a sigh of relief. I think the Raging Cajuns are probably thinking, great. And I think this team has a chip on its shoulder. And they're also playing for something. They're playing for Jerry's daughter, who died before the start of the season. And that's brought them together. So you have a very motivated team that is emotionally invested. They are already laying the groundwork for this, about the chip on their shoulder, because Jerry had already started laying the groundwork that he didn't think that they were going to be hosting a regional. So those women, if you interview them, they're not girls, they're women. They're going to have themselves quite a chip on their shoulder when they go into Oxford for that regional.
I mean, Coach Glasgow said it straight up that he saw this coming.
I've been coaching 10 years and I've never got it right. And I had it. First round, SEMO. Second round, Ole Miss. And exactly how I had it in my head that it would go, and that's what we got.
So, yeah, no surprises for the coach, at least, when it comes to this draw.
The Raging Cajuns are 64-36 all-time in the NCAA regional round, including a 30-9 mark in claiming regional championships and advancing to the super regional round in 7 of the last 11 appearances. You're welcome, Ole Miss. So you have a team that wins regionals. You have a team that knows how to go toe-to-toe with the best in a regional round. This is a team that's motivated, that's going to have a huge chip on their shoulder. Yeah, it should be a good weekend in Oxford. But this is what one of the Raging Cajun stars had to say last night when the selections were done live there at Pete's.
Honestly, I'm excited. We were expecting that. We were expecting to stay in the South. We knew that we were going to either be going to Texas or Ole Miss, so we were pretty much expecting both.
That, of course, was Raging Cajun senior third baseman Kerry Grimion, all Sunbelt performer. I think you're going to see a very focused team. I just do. I think you're going to see them with a chip on their shoulder. Action begins at the NCAA Oxford Regional on Friday as UL takes on Southeast Missouri at 3:30. That'll be followed by Ole Miss versus Chattanooga at 6.
Something you might be curious to hear.
I am very curious.
You've been talking about how this team could maybe carry a chip on their shoulder going into it. We do actually have a cut from Lexi talking about being a little disappointed that they weren't hosting. So I'm curious to see.
Yeah, I guess it was a little disappointing because it would have been awesome to host just to have our fans and all of our home crowd there to watch us. But, I mean, that's how it goes. It really doesn't matter where we play. Just to have the opportunity to go somewhere and win is good enough for us.
It's disappointment, but not like... You see the reaction of them, and if you were there last night at Pete's, or you, even if you just go to the Raging Cajun homepage for softball, and you click on the story about them being selected, and you see the photo after they're announced, do those girls look, and those young women look to you like they're dejected by any stretch of the imagination? No. They are not. This is a team that looks ready to play. This is a team that looks ready to win an NCAA regional. This is a team that looks ready to turn some heads and make it to the Women's College World Series in Oklahoma City. Oh, and by the way, because we're so focused on the selection, we just glossed over the fact that, yeah, they won the conference tournament. Once again, this is a team that didn't lose a single game in conference play.
And they were challenged during the tournament a little bit. The tournament games did not come as easy as the regular season ones.
That's correct. They, Summer Ellison gave up some early runs in those games. But the closeout game versus Coastal Carolina, they win 1-0. They get the one run in the bottom of the first. And Summer led them the rest of the way. She ended her regular season in the tournament 37-4. 37-4. Ridiculous.
Good luck, Ole Miss.
It is the Raging Cajuns' 15th Sunbelt Conference Tournament Championship in the 20-year history of the event. 15 out of 20. And the program's first 50-win season since 2012. Next up for the Raging Cajuns, Oxford Regional. If I'm Ole Miss, I'm sending an angry worded letter to someone at the NCAA. Like today. Just saying. Be like, what? Who do we have to play? We're hosting? This is what you're doing to us? Why are we being punished? We're not the football team. Hugh Freeze didn't coach us. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Mondo Duplantis. Woo! He had himself a heck of a Saturday as well up in Fayetteville, Arkansas. We'll talk about that right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing, and simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1, that's the Stadium Network, 24 hours of sports coverage, talk, games, clips, my beautiful mug in HD. Terrific weekend. It was a busy weekend, right? Once again, LSU baseball goes on the road. They had a 5-game losing streak after dropping the first two games at Arkansas, but Duplantis steps up with the 3-run homer. Antoine Duplantis, former Lafayette High star. Todd Peterson out of the bullpen, 4 shutout innings. Gets the win. The Tigers avoid the sweep, stop the bleeding, and now hopefully are fired up and focused and can finish the regular season strong with a Tuesday night game against UNO, which you can listen to live right here on 103.7 The Game, and then a 3-game series at Alex Box Stadium versus Auburn to close out the regular season. Like I said before, at the top of the hour, do not be surprised if you see LSU not plummet in the polls. They did lose a series to a top five team in the country, and it's still LSU. They are going to do everything that they can to ensure that LSU hosts a regional. If LSU can close out, win the series against Auburn, take care of UNO, maybe win, I'd say, two games at the SEC tournament, I think that's enough for them to host an NCAA regional. Raging Cajuns themselves, they're trending in the right direction. They swept Georgia State. They were on the outside looking in to getting into the Sun Belt Conference tournament in Conway, South Carolina. Now they're firmly entrenched in the top 10. They wrap up their regular season on the road against ULM, trying to build some momentum now having won back-to-back weekend series for Tony Robichaud's club, where Gunnar Leger made an appearance on Sunday night. And then Raging Cajun softball went through the Sun Belt Conference tournament, tested, but didn't drop a game, won yet another conference championship. They found out last night they're headed to Oxford for the Ole Miss Regional, Oxford Regional rather, but Ole Miss is the host. And the 50-win Raging Cajun softball team is going to have a chip on their shoulder. And their path to get to Oklahoma City, I like it. I like it a lot because the winner of that regional in Oxford plays the regional winner of the Tucson Regional, number 6 seed overall in the country. But we mentioned Duplantis. His 3-run homer helped the LSU baseball team win Saturday's game. Well, on the same day, in the same town, his little brother, the cultural phenomenon, Mondo Duplantis, well, he just went out there and did this.
On the street, they're actually about four doors down from each other in the hotel even.
Third attempt, 19-8 and a quarter for a collegiate record.
Got it!
Yes! He gets it!
Wow!
Mondo Duplantis. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. He won the SEC championship there in Fayetteville, Arkansas, by jumping 19-8 and a quarter in the pole vault. He was one of several individual SEC championships by LSU members. Javon Harrison won the high jump. Christian Miller took top honors in the triple jump. And Mondo took top honors in the pole vault, while the 4x100-meter relay team led the way for the purple and gold men's track and field team, which claimed its 23rd Southeastern Conference outdoor championship on Saturday night and the first outdoor SEC title since 1990. Yeah, 1990 had been the last time that LSU won the SEC outdoor men's title. The LSU women's team also had a special performance Saturday, led by Richardson, who complete meet with triple with wins in the 100 meters, 200 meters, and anchored the 4x100-meter relay team. So congratulations to the LSU track and field teams, including Mondo Duplantis, yet another piece of hardware for that young man. First hour in the books, second hour coming up, high school baseball talk with Justin Boyd, Opelousas Catholic coach. His team plays for a state championship later today, right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Raging Cajun hoop star Alfred Payton.
But it's definitely a boost for you, you know, when you look up in the face, you see your mom, see your head, night in and night out, it's just different. And I encourage everybody to be enough to play at home, to do it, deserve it.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 The Game. It's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline as we welcome on our next guest. He is currently in his 11th season as the head coach of the Opelousas Catholic baseball team. His team is playing in the state championship today, later at McMurray Park there in Sulphur. first pitch scheduled for 2:30 in the Division IV state championship game. He's led the Vikings to 5 state semifinal appearances, and now its first state championship appearance, and he's looking to help the Vikings come home with their first state championship in baseball since the late 60s, early 70s, when the school was actually referred to as AIC. His team is 26-11 overall, and they are the District 5-1A champs. It's our privilege to welcome to the program Opelousas Catholic head baseball coach Justin Boyd. Coach, how are you this morning?
Oh, doing good. Thank you, Mr. Raymond.
Appreciate you making some time out for us. You're going to be playing for the state championship later today. Let's start right there. After getting to the state semifinals 4 times but being unable to punch your ticket to play for a state championship, that occurred this year. You guys are playing for the state championship. How good does it feel, Coach, for you and the Vikings to be able to be in Sulphur today playing for a title?
It feels really great, man. I'm really proud of all our kids. I think in years past, we've always had one inning that kind of did us in the semifinals. This year, we had that inning, and we overcame it, you know, and kept at it to figure out how to get a win. You know, just let that one inning affect us like it has in previous years.
We're talking to Opelousas Catholic head baseball coach Justin Boyd on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Coach, let's talk a little bit about this year's team. You guys did win 26 games. You were able to claim the District 5-1A championship. Tell us a little bit about the makeup of this year's squad. Are you a veteran team? Are you a young team? Or is it a combination of both?
Yes, sir. I think we have 6 seniors. Most of them, you know, were starters last year. Some of them starters as sophomores. And I think one started a little bit as a freshman. So I had a good experience coming back. I had a lot of pitching experience coming back that we were looking forward to. We only had 2 seniors last year. We lost in the quarterfinals last year. They kind of got a little experience with, you know, the 3-game series. You know, I have some young kids that are waiting. You know, they're going to be good one day. But overall, we were mostly a junior-senior team. I think we would play 2 sophomores, but most of the time it's just juniors and seniors. So we got a good leadership, a lot of experience also on the field every day.
Tell us a little bit about that leadership that you have there, Coach. Who are some of the guys that are leaders not only on the field but off the field for your program?
I think we do a good job in the dugout, you know, at practice, pulling for each other. You know, we work hard every day in practice, and we're a team. You know, we win and lose together. We try to pick each other up. The seniors have done an unbelievable job, you know, talking to the younger kids and pulling for each other. And just, you know, they've been playing together a long time. You know, the seniors and juniors have been playing together since they were 5, 6 years old. So it's been fun to watch them grow up, you know, and still be able to play together, you know, as juniors and seniors in high school. So they like each other. They hang around on the weekends together. You know, they go to movies together, different kind of things like that. So it's easier to become a team whenever they like each other on the field.
We're talking to Opelousas Catholic head baseball coach Justin Boyd. Coach, let's talk a little bit about your state semifinal game. Everything has been thrown into a tizzy due to the severe weather that's blanketing the state late last week. You were able to get your state semifinal game in, a win over Ascension Catholic, the defending state champs. How important was that for you and your team to get that game in before the weather derailed everything until Sunday and Monday?
Yeah, we you know, going into the week, it looked like it was going to be raining, you know, for our day too. We woke up that morning, it was ugly outside, raining, but, you know, by the time 11 o'clock rolled around for the game, it was sunshine and not raining. So we felt we kind of got lucky. You know, it's even better now that, you know, you get to play a state championship game and everybody's available. You know, my pitchers get to come back from Wednesday. I told them earlier, it's not really going to happen that often that everybody's available to pitch in a semifinal and a state championship game, you know, because of the break in the games. But I'm glad we're not stuck, you know, in Sulphur waiting to play. In years past, we've done that before. We've been in Monroe, and I think it was 03, and we spent 3 nights up there not playing, just waiting for the weather to pass through. I thought they made a good decision this year and just said, hey, we're going to wait till it stops raining, and then we'll bring everybody back in and give everybody a chance to get to the games on Sunday and Monday.
Coach, talk a little bit about what have you been able to do, you and your staff, over this weekend. I know talking to you back on last Friday, that you were, you know, squeezing in some practice time when the rain stopped. We had a brief stoppage of severe thunderstorms, and you were able to get out there and get practice. So what did you do over the weekend to keep your guys focused and fresh, ready to go for today's state championship game?
Well, most of the time we were just kind of in the cages right now. Everything's really so wet. We're gonna practice. You know, we practiced at in Broussard at St. Julian Park on the turf, where, you know, as long as it's not raining, you're pretty much good to go, because we weren't getting our infield or our outfield. It's just too wet. So the luxury of being able to go to a turf field is big. You know, being able to practice outside rather than just in the cages, or just being able to throw, not being able to take any fumble or anything like that. So that definitely helped us out to prepare us for Monday.
We're talking with Justin Boyd. He's the head baseball coach at Opelousas Catholic High School, right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Coach, how do you prepare for a state championship game, though, because your team's never had to deal with this, of being in that kind of spotlight? You've been to the state semifinals a handful of times, but never to the state championship. Are you changing your approach at all? Are you doing anything differently over this past weekend and today for the game?
No, I think I just want to kind of get out of the way, you know, let the kids play. They're really talented. They love playing the game. They're ready to play. You know, whenever it starts raining, they're ready to play. So I don't want to be, I want to get them ready, but I want to kind of let them play. You know, I think I like our chances with the way we've been competing in the batter's box and on the mound, playing defense. I think we've got a good shot if we just play the game like we've been playing since we're five.
Coach, tell me a little bit about, you talk about playing, you're playing one of the perennial powers in the state, a Wachita Christian, who's been a 8-time state titleist since 1987. This is a perennial powerhouse program at this level. What kind of challenges do they present your ball club?
They're number one seed for a reason. They played a tough schedule, got a bunch of wins, you know, 15-something wins in a row, maybe more than that. They haven't lost it a long time. But they played a game. We got to watch them play, you know, after our game Wednesday to kind of see what we're up against. And then, you know, it's a big, strong kid. They play really hard. Don't know who we're going to face pitching now that, you know, they're the same way as us, that they can bring back their guy from the first day. So we're kind of preparing for a left-hander or a right-hander, not knowing who we're going to face. Anything that's special, I think, is not easy. It's going to be hard regardless of who we're playing in the state final game. You got to lay it on the line, you know, see who scores the most, really. Who plays the best, I think, is going to win on Monday.
Coach, what does this experience mean to you? I mean, obviously, you've been there a long time at Opelousas Catholic, but your father pitched on the 1969 and 1970 state championship teams there at AIC, which is what the school was known before it became Opelousas Catholic. What does it mean to you to have that connection with your dad and with the school?
It's awesome. To be able to think back, you know, I don't make him sound too old, but that long ago, he was in the same where I was. You know, he was being able to play in the state championship game multiple years, you know, so that this is like the best thing I am. Just thinking back, talking with him, how things were, I still talk to some of the players that played with him a long time ago. I know some of them are coming to the game, or were at the semifinal game. My dad's twin brother, who was on that team, also is coming in, you know, to watch the game. So it's just going to be a great experience just to be at the game, but also to be able to play in a game that my dad played in, you know, 50 years ago. Not the same place, but, you know, it's still a school state championship.
Coach, what's been the reaction like around the school and around Opelousas about you guys making this run and being able to play for a state championship? What's been the reaction?
I think, you know, everybody's so proud of the kids, you know, especially me also, to be able to get past this point. I thought we played really well in a semifinal game for the first time, you know, ever. But everybody's just so happy, you know, they're looking forward to Monday, and they're just proud of them. I'm proud of them, too. We played together. We played hard. We were patient. We did a lot of things right, and, you know, when you do things right, good things usually pay off for you, and I think that happened on Wednesday.
Well, Coach, appreciate you making some time out for us. Congratulations on breaking through, getting to the state championship round, and good luck today out there in Sulphur, bringing back a state championship.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
That's Justin Boyd. longtime head baseball coach at Opelousas Catholic High School, joining us there on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We got to hit a break right now, but more RP3 and Company coming up after this, right here on 103.7 The Game.
It's off to Leonard, defended by Simmons. Is this the dagger?
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW, channel 32.1, Stadium Sports Network. Look, this past weekend we've talked a lot about, it was jam-packed. LSU baseball avoids being swept on the road as Antoine Duplantis hits that three-run shot there in Fayetteville to give the Tigers a victory, a much-needed victory to end a five-game losing skid. The Raging Cajuns right here in our backyard get a series sweep over Georgia State to build up momentum and have themselves firmly now entrenched in the top 10 to helping them get into the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. The Raging Cajuns softball program goes on the road there in San Marcos, gets themselves the Sun Belt Conference Championship. Sunday, they find out that despite winning 50 games, they have to be a 2 seed in the number 11 seed regional as they head to Oxford this coming weekend, take on Ole Miss in that regional. And Mondo Duplantis winning the SEC championship. Individual championship in the pole vault, as well as helping LSU win the team championship for the first time since 1990. A lot going on. High school baseball championships. We just got done talking with Justin Boyd, Opelousas Catholic head coach, whose team will be playing for a state championship later today. But as exciting as all that was, two game sevens in the NBA playoffs yesterday. You heard it. Give it to me again, Cody. I need the clip again.
It's off to Leonard, defended by Simmons. Is this the dagger?
To 90, Kawhi Leonard. Jump shot, off-balanced, releases it with about 0.5 seconds left. The buzzer goes off, and it hits the rim, bounces not once, not twice, not three, four times. There's that great photo of Kawhi crouched down on the ground like it's a mixtape pose, with one of his teammates holding him, and Joel Embiid looking in going, I hope that doesn't go in. I hope that doesn't go in. And sure enough, it went in. Big-time players make big-time shots. It's a cliche, but there's a reason why Kawhi Leonard's considered one of the top five players in this league.
Where do you – because we can't help ourselves as a society today to compare – something that happens to something that's already happened, to try to rank things or list things. The Derek Fisher shot with like 0.3 seconds on the clock, where he basically, like a volleyball, he batted in a three-pointer for the Lakers to win a playoff series.
And then ran off the court immediately.
I forget however many years ago that was.
It's been a while, but yeah.
But where does – I mean, this gives me a similar feeling to that. To like that shouldn't have happened. That's not how it should have gone down, but – that is exactly how it happened.
I mean, we had one recently where Dame Lillard shot that 37-footer against the Thunder, and everyone was like, that was a terrible shot, but it went in.
Right, but see, at least it went. I just mean because the 0.3 seconds on the clock for Fisher and the four bounces on the rim for Kawhi Leonard, those are things.
Just
I mean,
ridiculous.
In the highlight, you can hear it. You can hear the ball. Dunk, 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 dunk. And then it goes, and it's like, wow.
He comes in, he gets the inbound. Inbound the ball to Leonard, who was originally guarded by Ben Simmons. And then Joel Embiid picks him up to pursue him against the right sideline, right? And Leonard jumps up to shoot the shot. And if you watch it, Embiid is a big guy. He had his hand up. He jumped too. So Leonard had to get that ball over the wingspan of Joel Embiid, one of the biggest humans on the face of the planet. And he gets it, and it just bounces. And it's just such an arrange of motions for everyone involved. Obviously, jubilation for the Toronto Raptors. They win in advance. Leonard scored a game-high 41 points. It's the only second – here's the crazy thing, which adds to how this shot is going to go down, Cody, back to your point. It's only the second buzzer beater in a winner-take-all game in the postseason. Think about that. It's only the second buzzer beater in a winner-take-all game in the postseason.
Dang.
The only other one, Michael Jordan's iconic shot to defeat the Cleveland Cavaliers in the first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs back in 1989, where he dribbles and he comes over and he shoots it over Craig Elo. The famous Craig Elo shot that they use in all the Air Jordan commercials and Gatorade commercials. Yeah, that's the only other one. It's that one and now Kawhi.
I would have lost money on that bet.
Crazy. Now, Leonard shot the ball a lot last night. Kawhi did. 39 shot attempts, that's a lot. But I have no problem with that. You want to know why? Because if you're the guy on your team, you're going to put your team on your back. Do you want Kawhi Leonard jacking up shots, or do you want Kyle Lowry? You want Kawhi Leonard. You want the guy who's won an NBA championship. Okay, who's the best two-way player in the league. That's what you want. So I have no problem with that because he had the confidence to keep shooting because he's like, damn it, I'm going to do whatever it takes to win this game for my team. The 39 shot attempts on Sunday were the second only to Elgin Baylor's 40 back in 1962 as the most in an NBA Game 7 scenario. Joel Embiid was beside himself. Great moment after the game. He is in tears, crying on the court after his team lost Game 7 of the Eastern Conference semifinals. And Mark Gasol, a midseason pickup by the Raptors, former Grizzly great, goes over and hugs him. Goes over and hugs him. Classy move. Classy move. Went over there. And if I'm a 76ers fan, I know you're upset today. I get it. And we mock the process from time to time, because the process really hasn't worked. It's Joel Embiid who had injury issues that's been able to overcome his injury issues. Ben Simmons still can't shoot the damn ball. By the way, side note, this whole thing of, well, the mid-range game is irrelevant. I saw a lot of mid-range jump shots in the playoffs this past weekend and this past week, including to the two teams that advanced and moved on. It's just not dunks and three-pointers. Mid-range game is still there and it's still needed. I saw a lot of it. I've seen a lot of it in this playoffs. By the way, about that wingspan I talked about, Joel Embiid, 7'6" wingspan. He was beside himself. But I like that. I like the emotion shown by Joel Embiid. It means he cares. This is not a Kyrie Irving situation. Remember when Kyrie Irving and the Boston Celtics were eliminated last week by the Milwaukee Bucks, who now will face off with the Toronto Raptors in the Eastern Conference Finals? There was no emotion. There was nothing. It was as if nothing happened. It was as if he got back from visiting his tax professional. Nothing. Joel Embiid, upset, angry, crying. I loved it. I love seeing that. Terrific series. Can't wait to see Raptors, Bucks. That should be entertaining. Kawhi Leonard versus the Greek Freak. But that wasn't the only Game 7 that we were blessed with yesterday, ladies and gentlemen. The Portland Trail Blazers take down the 2 seed, the Denver Nuggets, 100-96. And advance to the Western Conference Finals for the first time since 2000.
Craig isolated on McCollum. 8 to shoot. McCollum the drive, pushback jumper. It's good! C.J. McCollum with 37, and it's back to 3.
C.J. McCollum, the Denver Nuggets keyed up on Dame Lillard. Frustrated him the entire series. But what the Nuggets forgot to do, who needed 7 games to win their opening round series against the San Antonio Spurs, they forgot about C.J. McCollum, who has blossomed in front of us the last year or so, and especially this playoffs, as possibly, along with Jrue Holiday of the New Orleans Pelicans, two of the most underrated players in the NBA. So congratulations to the Portland Trailblazers. They'll take on the Golden State Warriors, who, without Kevin Durant and with Steph Curry being held to 0 points, zero, in the first half of Game 6 at Houston, the Rockets don't have to face KD. Steph Curry has no points at halftime. They have Beyonce in the damn house. They have the woman from Game of Thrones in the house. And they still, the Houston Rockets still find a way to lose at home, Game 6, versus a Kevin Durant-less Golden State Warriors and Steph Curry having 0 points at halftime. Oh, by the way, Steph Curry ended up with 33 points in the second half. I don't want to hear about the Houston Rockets no more. I don't want to hear about them as a contender no more. Shut up. I don't want to hear it. Stop. Just stop it. When we come back, we'll talk to our good friend Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. We've covered a lot so far today. LSU baseball, Raging Cajuns baseball and softball, LSU track and field team, NBA playoffs. We even mentioned a Game of Thrones reference, I do believe. I'm waiting on the Detective Pikachu reference from my producer extraordinaire, Cody Schutz. It's coming.
It might take a week, yeah.
Oh, he hasn't seen it yet. Oh, that's why he hasn't brought it up. He hasn't brought it up.
It was Mother's Day weekend, Raymond.
That's correct. That is correct. Maybe our next guest will bring up Detective Pikachu. I doubt it. I seriously doubt it. Let's hope he doesn't. Pray to baby Jesus that he doesn't. Let's head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline as we welcome on our next guest. He joins us every Monday morning, bright and early. You can read his work with TigerDetails.com. It's the one and only Jarrett Rozier. Jarrett, how are you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing pretty well. How are y'all?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well.
I don't have any Detective Pikachu references, but if anybody ever wants to play Super Smash Brothers, I will dominate anyone with Pikachu every single time, and that's about as good as I have for a Pikachu reference for you right now.
Yeah, that down B is devastating.
Oh yeah, yeah. We a couple weeks ago, after all the NOLA.com Prospect Union news, a couple of us went to New Orleans and spent the weekend with Amos Morrell, and they wanted to bust out the N64 and have a little rotation going. And after I beat everyone one after another and then back around again, I was like, y'all, like, if y'all just want to take this from me, like, this isn't going to be fun for y'all. It's like that.
We started off today's show with Jarrett Rozier bragging about dominating video games. I love it. Jarrett, let's talk a little bit about, I know you don't spend a lot of time dealing with the baseball program or that much the track and field. You're primarily, your duties with Tiger Details is primarily football and recruiting with some hoops involved. But how amazing is it, the Duplantis family dynamic there on campus in BR? I know they were staying in the same hotel this past weekend up in Fayetteville, and Antoine hits the 3-1 blast that helps LSU baseball team avoid the sweep at the hands of Arkansas. And then a little while later, his little brother, the cultural phenomenon himself, Mondo, pole vaults his way into an SEC championship and helps the LSU men's and track field team win its first outdoor conference championship since 1990. What has that been like with both Duplantis brothers on campus at the same time?
I mean, it's been a lot of fun. The success that that family has had in Baton Rouge, I don't know that I need to tell folks in the Lafayette area anything that they don't know or haven't been watching from the time that those siblings were very young, because I remember covering Mondo as a young, you know, freshman in high school, just kind of coming up and already hearing about this guy basically being the world leader for his age group every single year, all the way up through. And obviously Twani was finishing up his high school career and then making his way to Baton Rouge. But those Duplantis kids, man, and obviously the parents, incredibly talented parents who, have their own athletic history behind them. So just a talented family overall, but right now to see the career that Twani has put together, and now to see Mondo at the college level, continuing doing some of the things that people have been talking about him doing from such an early age, it's definitely been a fun time. And they're always fantastic to talk to you before, after, whatever. I mean, just a great family, and obviously a very talented family, and it's been a lot of fun for everyone. I hope everyone's kind of appreciating it, because you don't see these types of things. Obviously, Twani chasing a hits record that has stood for quite a while, and now Mondo doing things that every time out you realize is a special occasion.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier. He covers LSU football, LSU recruiting, and LSU hoops for TigerDetails.com. Jarrett, tell me a little bit about the news. Former LSU four-star recruit, defensive tackle, David Cotton, officially announced his transfer. I do believe it was yesterday evening or last night that he's officially transferring to Southern. What do you know about that decision, Cotton's decision to go to stay local and stay there in Baton Rouge, but just going to Southern?
Yeah, I don't know a ton about specifics of how it ended up being Southern. Obviously, he's a guy that folks had wondered what his future in purple and gold looked like for a while. As you got into this spring and saw the recruiting class coming in, and just wondering who were some names that might be on the move, he was a guy that kind of came up, and then had been one that people have been watching for the last couple of months. And he posted the announcement last night as I was getting back into Baton Rouge. That defense, we've talked about, it looks like it has all the potential to be incredibly strong this fall. But one area, particularly as they ran into some injuries this spring, that folks kind of, I guess, are just interested to see how it plays out, is some of the depth on that defensive line. They've certainly got, with the guys that they bring back, they have some talent up front. But in the middle of that defensive line, you're ready to see how much of that load Tyler Shelvin is ready to carry on a more consistent basis this year than you necessarily saw him be able to do yet in his college career so far. Early indications, people are excited about just kind of the way he's gotten in shape and preparing for the fall. But beyond him, and then Braden Fajoko, who is kind of an undersized guy in the middle and is going to have to play a lot of roles, you start to wonder behind those guys. And then obviously Glenn Logan, Rashard Lawrence, and Neil Farrell has shown some flashes, what the depth looks like once you get into SEC play. And so you don't necessarily love to lose a guy, even if he's not going to be one of your premier names on the defensive front, because you do need a lot of guys on the offensive and defensive line in the SEC. And they will miss him to a degree, and we'll see how that develops as they get into fall camp.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com here on the Arco Equipment Hotline on RP3 and Company. Jarrett, this past weekend was a pretty big weekend for recruiting, right? We had three prospects coming in from out of state, a pair of guys from, I want to say, the Cincinnati area. That's Big Ten country, in particular Ohio State country, and then one a little bit closer to home. What can you tell us about the three guys that came in for official visits this past weekend for LSU?
Yeah, they had the couple of guys from Ohio, Darian Henry, the defensive lineman from up there, and Jaheim Thomas, a linebacker, as well as Mississippi offensive lineman Xavier Hill. And I think a lot of, I mean, you're not surprised to see a Mississippi guy come visit LSU and for LSU to be in play for a prospect from Mississippi right there next door. But I think to see the guys from Ohio come down and to hear some of the excitement from them, you know, Darian Henry in particular has been pretty vocal leading up to the visit, and then posting photos from the visit, just seeming really excited about the opportunity to kind of get to know the LSU program to get to know him and show the kind of interest in him that they're showing. And I think those visits and that interest, mutual interest, goes back to a lot of what we were talking about a week ago in just how different and impressive this LSU recruiting effort has been from a national level. Because how often do you hear LSU that much in the mix with guys from Ohio? And again, obviously they've already got the guys committed from the East and West Coast, but I really want to look at a list of how many states currently have prospects that hold legitimate offers from LSU, because that the amount that you see just kind of continuing to pop up as these coaches travel around the country is, and it's getting pretty up there.
Let's talk about Cyril Grayson, Jarrett. I mean, this is a guy that former Rummel and LSU track star that gets a chance. He's been signed by the New Orleans Saints after a tryout. What'd you think when you heard that the former Rummel and LSU track star is trying to make it in the NFL?
Yeah, good for him. You saw him, you know, obviously he was track focused by the time he got to college, and then he was one of those guys that popped up at Pro Day and worked out and flashed the speed when it was time for everyone was kind of looking at the football standouts. And then there's always a couple names that or maybe some local guys that have come back that you're not as familiar with, or occasionally have someone like a Cyril who was a track star that wants to start getting in front of some NFL scouts and try to get back more involved in that sport. And he's certainly worked his butt off, and we've been waiting to see something pan out. And what better place than the hometown Saints if he can really latch on there and make the most of this opportunity? That's a place that, for a guy like that that's trying to really kind of find his way back in that sport, as a guy that is going to be, you know, one of the last however many guys on that roster, what better place to have some support and really try to find your niche than hometown?
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier, TigerDetails.com, here on the Arco Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, we didn't really talk about it last week, and I want to get your thoughts on this. Is another transfer, Scott, who transferred to Grambling State. What can you tell us about that decision, and was that something that I know there had been some rumblings about him transferring out, the former LSU outside linebacker. He's now going to be at Grambling. We had heard a little bit about that. That couldn't be too much of a surprise, but your thoughts on Scott transferring out?
Yeah, I mean, similar to Cotton, just in terms of guys in that defensive front seven, and obviously Dontrez Scott had some ability to potentially play either side of the ball because he was one of the guys when they got in at tight end. He was a name that consistently came up, but he primarily came to LSU as as someone in that defensive front seven, and I mean, from his days at Faraday High School, you saw some of that big athletic ability. His size speed combination was certainly really intriguing to the LSU coaches and the LSU fan base, but it just never really panned out for him to get the type of consistent playing time that he, as well as that coaching staff, would have loved for him to have. And so you're right. He's another one of those names that throughout the spring was pretty consistently monitored as whether he might be on the move or not. And I think once you got through spring, and I guess you don't see a lot changing necessarily for him depth chart wise, ultimately he heads back up to North Louisiana. I think he's with this next opportunity, I'm interested to see what he can do Grambling State, because obviously a ton of potential has always been there, just never really ended up, you know, finding that right fit or opportunity down in Baton Rouge.
Jared, appreciate you making time for us as always, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. Sounds good. Y'all as well.
Jarrett Rozier, Tiger Details, joining us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline right here on 103.7 The Game. Some breaking news just popped. Michigan head coach John Beilein has agreed to a 5-year deal to become the coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, according to Woj with the 4-letter network. So John Beilein, one of the best college coaches in the game, is leaving the Big Ten Conference, leaving a national championship contender to go be the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. 5-year deal. Woj bomb early this morning. We got to hit a break here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Network. It's 24 hours of sports coverage. You give us a call if you like on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Once again, that's 337-706-0111. Covered a lot of things today. We led the show off with LSU baseball. Yes, they did lose the series, dropped 2 of 3 at Arkansas, the top team in the SEC West Division standings, a team ranked in the top 5 nationally. But they snapped their 5-game losing streak and did so in kind of dramatic, fiery fashion on Saturday, when former Lafayette High star Antoine Duplantis hits that 3-run blast. Todd Peterson, who has not been great this season, a lot of expectations, especially how he performed last year as the shutdown closer for them, he pitched 4 scoreless innings. They get out of Fayetteville with a win. Maybe this can be the turning point now for the LSU Tigers and Paul Menary's kids, because they've been fading a little bit. But I would not be surprised if later today, and I said this at the top of the show, that you don't see them plummet in the polls, that they stay around that 15 to 20 area where they've been at. Because I firmly believe this. If they beat UNO and let's say take 2 of 3, at least 2 of 3 from Auburn in the final weekend series inside Alex Box Stadium this coming weekend. You can listen to all 3 games live right here on 103.7 The Game later this week. And they take, say, 2 games. They win 2 games at the SEC tournament in Hoover. They're going to host a regional. I firmly believe that. So maybe that victory, maybe that'll help turn things around for this LSU baseball program. I wrote in a column that you can go read right now on the 103.7 The Game website under the RP3 blogs, that despite recent losses and despite fan outrage, Paul Menary deserves to keep his job. There's a lot that's been going on this year with the program. I understand last year they were mediocre. They were a 500 team in the SEC. They had to rally late just to get into an NCAA tournament regional. Reaching the SEC tournament championship game helped them, but they were still eliminated in the Corvallis regional by the eventual state, the eventual national champions in Oregon State. I understand having two similar years like that back-to-back does not live up to the expectations of LSU baseball, especially this year with the program starting off the season ranked number one or number two by the majority of the preseason publications, with having so many guys drafted that opted to come back instead of going to Major League Baseball. The number one rated recruiting class. Get Eric Walker back from injury. Josh Smith back from injury. I get all that. I understand that they may not be living up to quote-unquote expectations. But this is a team that in 2017 was an Eric Walker injury away from beating Florida for the national championship. They won 52 games that year. Great baseball programs. Even LSU under Skip Bertman had lulls. Paul Maneri, with everything that they've had to deal with the plague of arm soreness that this team has had. And are you really going to get rid of a guy after he lost his father, his best friend, the man who was best man in his wedding, the man who taught him the game of baseball? Are you really going to fire him after he lost his dad this year? Really? No. Paul Maneri's earned the right to have another year. And look, this win at Arkansas on Saturday that helped them avoid being swept could do that, could help turn things around for LSU this season. We also talked about the Raging Cajun baseball team. Tony Robichaux's squad picked up its second weekend series in a row. They had taken 2 of 3 at Coastal Carolina the week before. They sweep Georgia State. Now they're firmly inside the top 10 in the Sun Belt Conference standings. They wrap up their regular season this weekend at ULM with a 3-game stand. They take 2 of 3, they're in there. They can be as high as 6 or 7 in the standings, and they'll punch their ticket for the Sun Belt Conference Tournament in Conway, Arkansas. So both LSU and UL baseball teams could be trending in the right direction. That'll do it here for the second hour of RP3 and Company. When we come back, we'll talk to Jeff Palermo right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline once again as we welcome on our next guest. He is part of the Louisiana Radio Network. He's also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. It's our good friend, Jeff Palermo. Jeff, how are you this morning?
Doing well, Ray. How about yourself?
Doing well. I'm doing great. Let's start things off, and I led the show off with this, Jeff. I said, when is a series loss not really a series loss? And I was talking about the LSU baseball team. I understand that they lost, dropped the series 2 of 3 to Arkansas, but the way they won the final game, the energy, the enthusiasm, Todd Peterson, Antoine Duplantis, it felt different. It did not feel like they dropped the series to Arkansas. It felt like they have not only stopped the bleeding but turned things around. Your thoughts on what occurred up in Fayetteville?
I thought it was a season-saving victory because if they lose that game, a lot of negativity heading into tomorrow night's game against UNO, a lot of negativity heading into the final week of the regular season. If they don't win that game, they have 14 conference victories, and probably our discussion today is, are they even going to make the NCAA regional? Are they going to even make the NCAA tournament? But getting that win was huge. I mean, that was a it just seemed like when they were down 3-0 heading into the eighth inning, it just seemed like you might as well just say the season is over. And then Antoine Duplantis lifts that fly ball that didn't look like when it left the bat that it was going to carry over the fence, but it did. They finally got some pitching. Landon Marceau stepped up. Todd Peterson really stepped up. Had a really pitch out of a tough jam in the sixth inning. Got a big double play ball to get out of a bases-loaded jam. So we've seen these big victories before. I mean, they've won some big games this season. I mean, shutting out Georgia earlier this year on a Friday night, taking 2-3 from Mississippi State. After losing to Florida in game one, rallying back and winning two. The electrifying win over Ole Miss the weekend before on Friday night. But a lot of these victories don't carry over into the next game. And this is one more opportunity, Ray, where they will try to build on a big win and see if it can, if it can't carry it over, because they really need to, they need some victories here because they're fighting with Ole Miss. They're battling with the Rebels as far as who will be hosting an NCAA regional.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network. He's also co-host of Tiger Ag Radio, talking to him here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, the way the series began was – your thoughts on how the series began. I know they roughed up Hilliard last Thursday, and Walker seemed to pitch pretty well on Friday, right? And then things kind of went sideways for the Tigers. Your thoughts on the first two games of the series?
Well, Mikhail Hilliard I don't see how they can throw him out there again as a Friday night starter. It hasn't worked the last 2 weeks. You need, especially on Friday night, with that be or Thursday night, whatever the case may be, game one of the series, you need your starter to go five innings. Or else you put your bullpen in a big bind. And they were really thin going into Saturday when it comes to pitching. And they're already thin to begin with because of the amount of injuries they've had within their pitching staff. Thank goodness Landon Marceau and Todd Peterson, those were the only two pitchers they needed. So they got to figure out something else there. I don't know what the answer is, whether you move Eric Walker to Friday or Thursday, and then throw Marceau in game two, and then leave game three TBA. And if you don't end up using Zach Hess in the first two games, maybe you can then have Zach Hess start that final game. But Mikhail Hilliard's not your answer there. And that was the big concern when Pulmonary made that decision to take Zach Hess out of the bullpen. Ray, I would be 100% in favor of that move if LSU had three quality starters, or if they had two starters that they can count on. Right now they don't have any with Cole Henry injured. So why take a guy who has been pretty good as a starter? I wouldn't say great. Can give you a great outing, as I mentioned that game against Georgia earlier this season. He can go out there and throw 8-7 terrific innings and really give your team a chance to win. And even when Hess has been knocked around, at least he can get you into the sixth inning. So you save a couple innings out of your bullpen. I think it's kind of interesting, this whole Zach Hess dynamic. I think both sides have been right? He's certainly better as a reliever. I'm not going to doubt that, even though he got roughed up out of the bullpen on Friday. But he's needed on this specific team, he's needed as a starter. A guy that can get them off to a good start. He is their best opportunity to get you off to a good start in game one of the series. Pulmonary's kind of relied on the fact that this team has dropped a lot of series opening games and they've been able to rally back the next two games. But the margin of error is still thin right now for this team, and they just can't afford it. And then you got guys in the bullpen. You know, Trent Vitmeyer left with an injury this past weekend. Devin Fontenot hasn't pitched very well out of the pen. Matt Beck's been okay. I mean, he's not great. So the pitching is what is going to keep this team from really advancing far, unless it can tighten up a little bit and they can get a little bit more consistency from their bats too. That would help as well. But it'll be interesting to see who they throw out there on Thursday, because Mikael Hilliard's certainly not the answer. Maybe he's a game three starter or something else. But it would be great to get Cole Henry back, but even if he comes back, how much can you throw him? I mean, you're not going to push him. You're not going to ask him to go seven innings, six innings his first time out. So they got a lot of problems right now with pitching, even though they did get that big win on Saturday.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network. He's also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, what did you think about Todd Peterson? He stepped up in a big way on Saturday. Looked like the Todd of old. He was fiery. It seemed to ignite this team. What'd you see out of Todd Peterson on Saturday?
Todd Peterson is really good when he gets the ball and he throws it. And he throws it hard, like 95 miles an hour. Yeah, I agree with you. That was what you needed out of Todd Peterson. And maybe Peterson just said, hey, all these other guys are failing right now. And Devin Fontenot and Trent Vitmeyer. Now's my time to step up. And they need a guy like him to step up. He was great at the end of last season. He needs to be great for them at the end of this year. I think he has probably gained the confidence from Paul Maneri. Look, I mean, Paul went to a lot of different other relievers before he came back around to Todd Peterson. So I would think Todd Peterson at the moment is, you know, outside of Zach Hess. And even Zach Hess is questionable because his outing this past weekend wasn't that great. And that's kind of what you've been getting throughout this entire season, though, is you get a great performance from a guy and you sit there and say, okay, maybe, all right, the lights come on. Maybe this guy's going to go on a roll. And then the next game, it's two innings, four runs, or whatever it might be. They have found absolutely no consistency out of their pitching, starting relief pitching, middle relief, closing. And that's been one of the big – that's been one of the big problems with this team all season long, and we'll see. Todd Peterson was terrific. I thought he was the player of the game, even though the Duplantis hit that three-run homer. If it wasn't for him and the Houdini act that he did in the sixth inning coming in for Landon Marceau and just only allowing the one run, which was charged to Marceau, I thought that was terrific, and that kind of changed the game. You felt like, okay, LSU dodged a huge bullet there. They're still within striking distance here. I mean, if Arkansas puts up a crooked number in that inning, Razorbacks win, Tigers get swept, and we have all these questions. And we still have a lot of questions, but we have a lot more heading into the final week of the regular season.
Jeff, who's going to be taking the bump, in your opinion, for UNO tomorrow night?
Well, they went with Chase Costello last week, and that didn't work out very well. Maybe they try it again. I don't know. I really don't know what Paul does. I mean, he has tried so many different guys, and it hasn't worked. I mean, obviously you can take, the weekend starters out of there. They're not going to start. I guess maybe you go with Costello again. This is not a particularly strong UNO team, even though the privateers did a little bit better this past weekend in winning a series against Houston Baptist, but this has not been a very good UNO team. They might not even make the Southland Conference tournament, but LSU has not performed very well in midweek games. And that's what really could, that's another thing. You know, a lot of people want to sit here and say midweek games don't matter, but when you don't show up for them like they did last Tuesday against Louisiana Tech and they get bombed 12-1, and now you're fighting for a chance to host a regional, I mean, a lot of those losses to Tech, to Northwestern State, to Southern, McNeese, I mean, all that's really going to really going to be a negative check mark on their resume. So tough to say. They not only do they need to pitch well, they need to hit better. Scoring just one run against Tech, getting one run against one run against Northwestern State, McNeese, no runs. They got lucky on Saturday. I mean, the Antoine Duplantis home run covers up a lot of the lack of hitting that you've seen from this team as well. That's been a big concern. So I think you could take, in a sense, losing a midweek game like 8-6, like, because you're not throwing your best pitchers. And so, okay, if you give up eight runs, that's fine. That's going to happen. But when you just score 0, 1, or 2 runs in these midweek games, that's unacceptable if you're LSU. And there should be no excuses, no excuses at all. Unfortunately, there's been too many of that from Paul Mainieri, too. I mean, the excuse on Tuesday that the team didn't get to practice on Monday, and that was part of the reason why they lost on Tuesday. I mean, Louisiana Tech, they don't even have a home field anymore. The tornado damaged their home field, and you're complaining that you didn't get to practice on Monday? Tech's been through so much more than this LSU program, real-life stuff. And they came down to Baton Rouge and beat them 12-1. Just, there shouldn't be any excuses, and that's what I think gets the fan base really, really upset.
Speaking with Jeff Playermo, the Louisiana Radio Network here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, I want to wrap it up with this. LSU softball team going to be hosting a regional. Louisiana Tech is going to be in that. What do you think about their draw, where they've landed, and what kind of opportunity they have in front of them, possibly making it to Oklahoma City for the College World Series?
Well, they're struggling right now. They've lost 5 in a row. Yeah. And this was a team that really wasn't expected to do much, but this wasn't going into the year one of Beth Tarina's best teams. And I think they pitched better from the circle than expected. They had a lot of players that probably had better offensive years than they anticipated. But I think there's been a regression to the mean for this team over the last 5 games. They get swept by Alabama. Now they faced a really good pitcher in the SEC tournament in Florida, and it's 1-and-done in the SEC tournament, and they got blanked 3-0. But I still think Beth Tarina is a terrific coach. I think they can get out of this regional. Louisiana Tech is a great story. Just talked about the whole situation that's been going on with their campus, with the tornado that again, they have a facility that's no longer usable, or at least you can't have games there. I assume they can still practice on the facility, but they've gone through a lot. So they're playing well. They just won the Conference USA tournament. So, I think this LSU softball team probably gets a chance to kind of hit the reset button, get the home crowd. I'm sure there's a bit of a sigh of a relief that UL's not coming to Baton Rouge. I think that always adds a little tension, a little anxiety when they come here, because they know they're going to be facing a really good team, and that's a tough team, especially to face in a regional. So I think they catch a little bit of a break there. So,
yeah, Ole Miss, I'd be willing to bet you the Ole Miss Rebels aren't too happy about that UL's coming to them.
You don't want to see a 50-4 team in your regional. You do not want to see a 50-4 team in the regional. And I haven't followed softball enough to really dissect their schedule and figure out why they're not hosting the regional. But I know 50-4 is a really good record any way you slice it and cut it up.
Jeff, appreciate your insight as always, brother. Enjoy your week, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good, Ray. Appreciate it, man.
That's Jeff Playermo, part of the Louisiana Radio Network, co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, breaking down LSU baseball and a little softball action there for us. When we come back here, Astros sweep the Texas Rangers. We'll dissect it right here on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you or a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood. But sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig, tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig.
Breaking ball, and that's drilled deep to left field, and you can kiss it goodbye! Off the community leader's side, a two-run home run for Bregman, and a 4-0 lead for the Astros.
Astros got themselves the four-game sweep of the rival Texas Rangers.
It's like, there's got to be, is that like a Baker's sweep? It's more than, you know, three is normal. You get more than that. It's like a Baker's sweep. I don't know. Four games, though. Take that.
Tejas Rangers with your Globe Life American ballpark.
At Arlington.
Nolan Ryan Steakhouse. just name whatever. I'm sure it's just whatever it is up there. They're demolishing it. That's all I know. They're building a new park. Astros take the four-game series away from the Texas Rangers. They did so in convincing fashion yesterday with a 15-5 blowout. Houston had 18 hits in the game, led by George Springer, the Springer Dinger himself, and Alex Bregman, the former LSU Tiger. Springer led off the game with a home run, his third leadoff shot in a week and 29th of his career, and then later added another home run. He finished the game 5-for-5 with 5 runs scored and 4 RBIs. He became the first Houston Astros player with 5 hits and 5 runs in a single game, and the first Astros leadoff hitter with 5 hits and 2 home runs since Joe Morgan in 1965. So it's been a while, is what we're saying there. Bregman, meanwhile, homered twice and drove in 5 runs with his 3 hits. And they did this offensive output onslaught without Jose Altuve, because Altuve, the former league MVP, was placed on the 10-day IL, formerly known as the DL, with a strained left hamstring on Saturday. So he's going to be out for 10 games, or 10 days rather. But Springer, Brantley, Bregman, Carrera, this lineup is absolute filth. And they took care of business. Just 15-5, man. Like 15-5. This is how good that lineup is. It is just phenomenal. Decent performance on the bump as well. Corbin Martin went 5 1/3 in game 4 for the Stros. He only gave up 2 earned runs on 3 hits, struck out 9. So a strong performance from him. Colin McHugh, the former starter, has been pushed to the bullpen because he was struggling. Remember, we talked about it here on the show last week. Colin McHugh, first 4 starts of the season, was strong, had good stuff. Last 4, not so much. He's getting teed off on. Couldn't get his curveball to curve. Okay? They put him into the bullpen. He goes in there, pitches an inning and 2/3, gives up 3 hits, only 1 earned run, struck out 2. So McHugh's in the bullpen. Corbin Martin got the start. Strong performance. Now they have a 5-game winning streak. Now, they're firmly in place in the AL West, and they have a 3-game set at Detroit. That's right. Astros are heading up to Motor City without Altuve, once again, who's on the 10-day IL. 3-game set at the Tigers today, tomorrow, and then Wednesday. All games will be starting at 6:10 first pitch. You can listen to those games here on 103.7 The Game, as well as our sister station KVOL 97.7 FM 1330 AM Lafayette, also 104.1 in Lake Charles. So Astros are rolling. Even with their former league MVP, heartbeat of this team, Jose Altuve, on the IL. This team keeps finding ways to win. They're stacked. Bregman, Springer, Brantley, Carrera. Oh, I feel like I could go out there, and with a couple of BP practices, I could find a way to go 2-for-4 for this team. It's just, like, contagious, that great hitting. Of course, I just embellished greatly because my baseball career ended as a pinch runner for the freshman team my freshman year in high school. That's a story for another day. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're going to talk to Bro Bridge head baseball coach Kyle Cormier. His team won yesterday. They're playing for a state championship tomorrow in Sulphur, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. It's time now for us to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline as we welcome on our next and final guest of the day. He is the longtime head coach of the Bro Bridge High School baseball team. This year, the Tigers were phenomenal, dropping only 4 regular season contests on the way of racking up another district championship. But Bro Bridge is making something happen more than just district championships. They defeated Edna Carr in the opening round of the Class 4A playoff bracket, bested Karen Crow by 1 run in the next round, took out Pearl River 2-1, and then over the weekend, in the delayed state semifinals over in Sulphur at McMurray Park, they bested Lakeshore, the 2 seed, 8-3. And the Bro Bridge Tigers are now going to be playing for a state championship tomorrow night at 5:30 against top seed Tioga. It's our privilege to welcome back to the program longtime coach of the Bro Bridge Tigers, Kyle Cormier. Coach, how are you this morning?
Doing great, man. Doing great. Good morning to you.
Morning. Congratulations on the semifinal victory. Let's start right there. Tell us a little bit about how your team kind of rose to the occasion there in what can be termed a difficult scenario with the state championships and the state semifinals being thrown kind of into a blender, so to speak, due to the weather that the state experienced last weekend. Talk a little bit about your team's performance getting that 8-3 victory in the state semifinals.
I was really, really proud of the kids. You know, they were truly prepared, mentally, physically, and the kids nowadays are so much more resilient than me, for sure, because I'm so old fashioned, and you know, when things are out of whack, you know, it kind of throws me out of whack. But you know, we got such a mature group, you know, some hard nosed kids that, you know, it didn't matter where, if we had to play in a parking lot, you know, they were just ready to play. You know, it didn't matter when, where. You know, they were so relaxed, so confident, and, you know, they were truly ready. They were truly prepared. As far as the weather, you know, to be honest, you know, a wise man once told me that, you know, you can't worry about things you can't control. You know, so once when they moved it, and I think it was the safest thing, because actually lightning struck a tree next to one of the fields, like right next to one of the fields. So, you know, the LHSA has to consider, you know, thousands of people's, you know, their safety and the kids and everything. So, you know, I think it was a wise decision. And, you know, I think that this was a great Mother's Day present, especially for our mothers, for sure.
We're on the ARCO Equipment Hotline with Bro Bridge head baseball coach Kyle Cormier. Coach, you know, you make this march, you know, in the quarterfinals, you take down Pearl River. Game two was 7-2. Then game three, 9-8 to advance, and you were able to kind of move on from there. Tell us a little bit about the format, because I know it can get confusing, and it's changed over the years where you go from playing single games, then you have to play best 2 out of 3, and then it's back to single games. As a coach, how do you get your team prepared for that kind of up and down play during the playoffs?
Actually, you try to go through scenarios throughout the year. You know, maybe playing a doubleheader here and there, just so the kids are used to playing two games in a row.
Right.
I remember a couple years ago when these seniors were freshmen, we actually we played a game on a Saturday, and then when the game was over, we didn't have any doubleheader schedule that year. When the game was over, we actually had an inner squad after the game, you know, just so, you know, the kids were familiar with playing two games. You know, they ate snacks and sandwiches in between games, and then they came out and played like a little inner squad, just so mentally that, you know, they could be prepared for it. And sure enough, we played Tioga when these seniors were freshmen, and we ended up having to play three games, you know, and we beat them in the third game. So it was something that the kids have gone through. And like I said before, I think adults make such a big deal out of making things perfect and this and that. And the kids are so resilient, man. They just want to play ball, and, you know, they're prepared mentally and physically, and they're ready to play anytime.
We're on the ARCO Equipment Hotline with Bro Bridge head baseball coach Kyle Cormier. Coach, let's talk a little bit about yesterday's game in the Class 4A semifinals there in Sulphur. You guys jumped on Lakeshore early. You opened up that 3-run lead there in the second. How key was that for you guys to kind of strike first and get that lead and be able to, you know, pitch a game with a lead and pitch ahead?
Yeah, I mean that's you talk to any pitcher, and, you know, obviously that's huge for them. You know, and early on we always talk about, you know, big games, you know, just being able to weather the storm. You know, and sure enough, we swung first, and they got us three up, three down, and, you know, they got a base hit. You know, we ended up getting out of the inning, and then, you know, we got some big key base hits. You know, we talk about little things all the time, you know, just the difference in big games, you know, when teams are equal is the attention to detail. And, you know, we try very hard, you know, to teach our kids and, you know, to make it known that, you know, the little things are going to matter. And, you know, for instance, we got a two RBI, but before that, one of our courtesy runners that's stolen many, many bases throughout the year, he gets on first base and he has a good read on the pitcher, and he had a green light to go if you know, he had a good read. And sure enough, our junior runner, Connor Bergeron, steals second base without a throw. And before you know it, the next pitch, you know, Sorosky gets a base hit and scores two, you know, because that kid paid attention to detail and got the second, you know, we scored two instead of just one, you know, and it just kind of snowballed from there. You know, the little things we work on and preach about, you know, it's a really good feeling when, you know, in a big game, those kids actually use it, you know, and, that's a good situation, obviously, to be up, you know. And our kids after that, it you know, they were so relaxed, so calm, so confident, you know. And you know, once when we got the lead, you know, I think that they weren't going to be denied.
Talking with Coach Kyle Cormier, Bro Bridge High School baseball, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Coach, tell me a little bit about Caleb Sorosky. He pitched phenomenal for you against Lakeshore. Is he going to take the bump for you again tomorrow night in the state championship game?
No, he's not. He's reached his pitch limit. He did his job for us the entire year, to be quite honest. He threw, you know, he's a pitcher. You know, he's a top-notch pitcher. He's very smart. He understands the game. He understands how to control the running game. He understands how to pitch. You know, he makes it very easy on me, who calls pitches, you know, because, you know, what you think you're going to get, you know, he puts it where you want it. And I think he was so efficient, which he's been all year. I think he had like maybe 70 pitches going into the seventh inning, you know, so, and that's something he's been like that all year. You know, he really has. We played Ascension about a month ago or so, and Sorosky went against Sean Michael Brady, and within the first five innings, I think the game was, I think it was like 40 minutes. We went through five or six innings. I mean, they were both two really good arms, just, you know, really competing. But he threw really well against a really, really good lineup. You know, a lot of people, you know, think that, you know, we gave up three runs. But, I mean, that's, those guys have scored a lot of runs throughout the entire year.
Well, Coach, let me ask you this. If Caleb, you know, he's been a workhorse for you, if Caleb's not going to be taking the bump for you, who do you got lined up, or is it going to be more kind of a pitching by committee? Who's going to be taking the mound for you there for the state championship game?
That's a good question. We have four arms, to be honest, that, you know, that we've relied on all year. And, you know, we've been pitcher heavy, you know, throughout the entire year. We've relied on our guys on the mound. And they've been phenomenal for us, to be honest. We have a couple of seniors in Christian Gonzalez, Cole Mutzall, and Gage Colligan. And then we have a junior, Keegan Cormier. You know, all guys that, you know, we definitely, you know, we can depend on. And they've pitched in big games for us throughout the year in big situations. So I'm still, you know, kind of putting a lot of information together. And we're just going to, you know, whoever we think is the best matchup, you know, that's what we're going to go with.
Coach, tell me a little bit about what you know from Tioga. I know over the years you guys have played each other. I remember covering a game up in the Alexandria area where you guys eliminated them as the top seed when they were the top seed or top two seed. You guys came in there and beat them on the road. So I remember that. You guys have some familiarity in the postseason as well. Tell me a little bit about this year's Tioga team and what have you learned scouting-wise?
I got a chance to watch them against Benton the game before. And, you know, obviously they're really talented, very well coached. Coach Montiel does a great job with those guys. And, you know, real athletic. You know, they have their leadoff guy committed to UNO, as a junior. Their ace who threw yesterday, you know, is going to be a D1 commitment somewhere. And they got some talent, big guys, strong guys, some athletes that can run. You know, they do a lot of different things. They can bunt, you know, they can hit for power, you know, they can hit and run. They can do a little bit of everything. Very, very solid. You know, what you expect from, you know, the final game to play against a team that's solid. My son this summer played with about four of those guys for Tioga. So I'm familiar with a lot of their parents and, you know, it's a unique situation because, you know, we get a chance to play and we talked about it in the summertime, how neat it would be. And, you know, sure enough, 8 months later, you know, we're playing each other in the finals.
Coach, what's been the reaction with this terrific run? I know we talked earlier in the season when you guys were trying to close out the regular season, you know, and you were a star player there, football and baseball. This is your alma mater. We know how much this means to you and this program means to you. But what's been the reaction from the greater Brobridge community with you guys making this run? I'm sure your phone had been flooded with congratulation text and phone calls after you guys punched your ticket to the state championship game.
Yeah, it has. It has. To be honest, it's very humbling. You know, just, you know, seeing the support of, you know, the parents and grandparents and fans and friends and ex-players that have played for us and have been through this program. It's very, very special. Very, very humbling. And, you know, I'm going to enjoy this. You know, it's this situation that, you know, every coach dreams about. And, you know, it's something that people don't realize how extremely difficult it is, you know, to get to this game and to actually have a chance to win it all. But it's a great opportunity for us and our kids realize it. And, you know, we're just going to go out and play loose and, you know, let the chips fall where they may.
Well, Coach, I appreciate you making some time for us this morning and waking up early. Congratulations on winning in the state semifinals, and best of luck to you and your Tigers tomorrow starting at 5:30 over there in Sulphur. And hopefully we'll talk to you soon with state championship hardware back in tow, my friend.
That sounds like a plan. Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
That's Brobridge head baseball coach, longtime fixture of the program, Kyle Cormier. They've been one of the best teams in Acadiana for years. They turn out college prospects. They're always in the mix, making state tournament runs. But they've, you know, never been able to kind of get over the hump. Now they have a great opportunity to win a state championship tomorrow evening there in Sulphur. Appreciate Kyle Cormier making some time for us here on RP3 and Company. When we come back, hey, man, 3 hours. Woo! Flew by. We'll wrap things up right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW 32.1 as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. I want to take a moment to thank all of our guests that came on the show today. Justin Boyd, the Opelousas Catholic High baseball coach. His team's playing for a state championship later today. I want to thank him for coming on the show. I want to thank Kyle Cormier. His team is playing for a state championship tomorrow. That's the Bro Bridge High School coach. We just got done talking to him, wrapping up our conversation. Also want to thank Jarrett Rozier from TigerDetails.com and Jeff Palermo from the Louisiana Radio Network, as well as co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. Cody Schutz.
That's me.
I want to thank you for doing a terrific job today on the ones and twos. Was there anything that we needed to get to, my friend, that we did not?
I don't believe so. I haven't yet. Over the weekend, with as far as LSU baseball is concerned, Thursday, we all know how I felt in here after that game. On Friday, I was bothered by it very much, but then also said that, you know what, sometimes that's how baseball goes, and LSU has been guilty many times this season of seeming to give up on a game or letting a game get way away from them and not caring enough. That I didn't feel was the case Thursday night. I didn't necessarily feel like that was the case Friday night either when LSU lost. They were just beaten by an Arkansas team that was playing better baseball in those two games than LSU was, and I don't think there was much the Tigers could have done. Was I expecting the same thing on Saturday? Abso-freaking-lutely. Did I expect LSU to come out and try hard but lose again? Yes, that's what I expected. And the fact that they didn't, I think, I try to quell my hope because, yes, at the end of the day, I am an LSU fan, so it's easier for me to get worked up and say, oh, this one win is going to propel them into, you know, the type of baseball they need to be playing in this time of the year, and it's perfect, and go, go, go. I'm not there yet, but I'm very happy for the win LSU got on Saturday. And like Jeff Palermo said, I think this could be one of those wins that if LSU somehow, some way ends up in Omaha this year, which is still the goal. If LSU gets to Omaha this year, we can do that cliche thing of looking back at this game, that Saturday game of being maybe the turning point.
I would not even be as grand with that. It's a good point. Obviously, you want to end the season in Omaha. But for the LSU Tigers, who were on the brink of not hosting a regional and possibly not even getting into the NCAA tournament if they would have been swept by Arkansas and would have carried that on, that would have now been a six-game losing streak heading into their final midweek game. And then against Auburn, that could have been dangerous for the team not even to make it to the NCAA tournament, much less host a regional. I think they keep both of those things, once again, in lockstep. I think they're good for hosting NCAA regional. I don't think you're going to see them drop too far in today's poll. If they can end this week strong, beat UNO on Tuesday, hopefully at least take two or three or possibly win all three against Auburn at the box starting on Thursday through Saturday, have some momentum heading into the SEC tournament would be tremendous. And look, Paul Menieri always gets these guys to play extremely well in the SEC tournament. They always make a run. Remember last year, they were on the edge of not making an NCAA regional, and due to that run that they put on in the SEC tournament in Hoover, when they ended up losing to Ole Miss in the championship game, that helps them get into the Corvallis regional. So, that's the thing. Even with the setbacks, even with the losses to Southern and McNeese State and Northwestern State in the midweek contest and Louisiana Tech, they still have an opportunity despite the pitching problem with the arm soreness and the fact that there's not really a rotation. Jeff Palermo even commented on that. Could they kind of fight and scrap and get themselves into an NCAA regional, and maybe then you have a healthy Cole Henry? Hopefully you get him before then, maybe for the SEC tournament. Make a run. Host an NCAA regional. Everything's still there for the Tigers, just as it's still there for the Raging Cajuns. Look, Raging Cajuns still have a losing record. Tony Robichaud's bunch does. But by winning back-to-back weekend series like they did on the road at Coastal Carolina and then last weekend right here at the Teague, sweeping Georgia State. Now they're in the top 10, firmly entrenched in the top 10 in the Sun Belt Conference standings. They take 2 of 3 from ULM this weekend. They're going to this conference tournament, and then anything can happen. Look, the Raging Cajuns have talent in that lineup. Daniel LaHare, Handsome Monica, Hayden Cantrell, Todd Lott. They can get some consistency with the pitching. They could upset a few teams in the conference tournament. You never do know. Baseball is quirky like that.
Fickle. Fickle.
It's a fickle mistress. Tremendous show. Great way to start off the week. You guys be safe out there. Dan Patrick Show is next. Talk to you guys tomorrow.